Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're joined by Danielle Pletka. She is these days a senior vice president for foreign and defense policy studies at the highly regarded American Enterprise Institute. Danny comes to that position with a long record of service to our country, notably in the United States Senate, where she served as a senior professional staff member for the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, with responsibilities for Near East and South Asia. Very important portfolios, needless to say. She is the author or co-author and co-editor of numerous books, including Dissent and Reform in the Arab World, Empowering Democrats. We'll talk about that, I hope, in a moment. And also Containing and Deterring a Nuclear Iran. For sure, that's on the agenda. Danny Pletka, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too, Frank.
I am fond of saying that this is a wish rather than a prognosis, but I nonetheless wish it to you. Let's talk a little bit about the statement that the president made in the State of the Union address. I'm just sort of taking stock with people I respect around town and the country on this question that he's assured us that it's not even close that anybody is as powerful as we are, and that our standing has never been higher in the world than it is now as a result of 7 years of his administration as commander-in-chief. What's your take on that?
I thought that was a very disingenuous statement by the president. And I have to say, I actually appreciated his tone for a lot of the State of the Union. It wasn't hectoring. It was optimistic. And you know, I wrote about this. I said the president of the United States should always be an optimist about our country's future because our country's future is always bright. But the reality is that things, you know, aren't going well. Almost anywhere, not in Europe, not in our own country, not in the Middle East, not in Latin America, not in Africa. You know, things are okay in Australia, I think, still. But the fact that the president was unwilling to appreciate or even acknowledge that things were going badly and dismissed the problems in the Middle East as, you know, problems that have been going on for millennia, as if somehow they had nothing to do with his governance, seemed to me to be dishonest.
Yeah, well, that's the point I really wanted to get at. It's one thing to be optimistic about the future. It's another to be misleading the American people about the recent past and in a way, our present. And in that regard, Danny, talk a little bit about this regime that we are about to transfer something between $100 and $150 billion to. Namely the Islamic Republic of Iran. I know you followed closely and for many years this mullahocracy. What do you make of the deal that has been struck with them, such as it is, and the likelihood that that money most especially is going to wind up greatly intensifying the kinds of problems you've just alluded to?
So, you know, a lot of people have said, no, the money is going to go into the money that they're going to get as a result of Implementation Day, which is the most important day for the lifting of sanctions under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the Iran deal. The money that they're going to get, some suggest, is going to go to much-needed infrastructure, domestic economy. But this is a completely disingenuous argument. We all know exactly what it means. Iran made this deal because they are starving for cash, and they are starving for cash because they have their fingers in, a nuclear weapons program, B, a ballistic missile program, C, support for terrorism, including thousands of troops in Syria, and support for Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria, and support for the Houthis in Yemen. This is going to empower Iran, and that's why they felt comfortable picking up a bunch of U.S. sailors and keeping them overnight, because why not?
And perhaps being rewarded for it by John Kerry's diplomacy. Danny, again, is a gal who has worked on the Middle East portfolio longer and harder than most of us put together, really. You have an appreciation for what it means when the Iranians, before they even get the money, engage in that kind of provocative behavior, seizing our sailors, but so much more. And you've indicated, you know, some of the bad actors they are playing with, but, you know, ballistic missile tests, sending off to Russia, God knows what. Nobody's verified that it was actually enriched uranium that I can tell. And not having even signed this agreement, to the extent that this seems to be principally about humiliating the United States, sticking it to us, if you will, What is that likely to be read as by others in the region, and our interests there are likely to be affected, aren't they?
I wish I could say that this really was the first instance, the grabbing of our sailors in the Persian Gulf was the first instance of the Iranians humiliating us, but of course it's not. And I don't think that it did anything more than cement the view in the region that the United States is disengaged, that we are somehow, and I say this incredulously, somehow subservient to the interests of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and that we are in fact interested in shifting the balance of power and creating a compact in the Middle East that is governed by Iran. That's what the Arabs think. Increasingly, that's what the Israelis fear. And unfortunately, even though the Obama administration would deny it, everything that they have done feeds into that narrative.
Yeah. Do you think that is, in fact, their purpose? I think there are many of us who've concluded it's the only possible explanation at this point.
You know, if you're too clever by half, then it may well be their purpose. They're looking at the region and saying to themselves, all that fracking we oppose, that's kind of driven down oil prices, and the Middle East just isn't that important to us anymore. But darn it, look at those terrorist groups over there. Someone needs to get a hand on that. And if it's not going to be us, well, we know it's not going to be the Saudis. Why not the Iranians? After all, they've just made this great deal with us. And I think that the administration's narrative and calculus very much relates to those ideas.
Yeah. Bob Baer wrote a book along these lines, as you know, some years ago, and colleagues of mine think that that's pretty much the prescription that the administration is now following with ominous implications. Let me just jump. Last night, of course, there was a debate among the Republican presidential candidates, both the first tier and the second tier, Denny, and I neither of us had a chance to observe it all that closely, but what is your general view of how the Republican field is shaping up with respect to providing a credible and attractive alternative to the Obama foreign policy and national security program more generally?
I'm troubled when I listen to a lot of the candidates, as I know a lot of conservatives are, by suggestions. First of all, that it'll be easy for us to walk away from the Iran deal, because I think it actually has been structured in a way that makes it extraordinarily hard for the next president, whoever he or she is, to walk away from that deal. Second of all, that somehow, to use one of the candidates' phrases, making America great again is really just about standing up like a man and making deals with Vladimir Putin. Also troubling that some have suggested that, in fact, we don't have interests in the Middle East, that we can actually afford to stay out, and that we don't need to, that we don't need to further the national security interests and the values of the American people. So a debate that is in many ways troubling. There are some who I think get it. They may not be the ideal candidates for some people. Chris Christie, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, they to me seem to have sensible ideas about a foreign policy that could straighten out the U.S. But, the reality is that I don't get to decide, as you know, Frank. Neither do you.
Funny,
it's the people of Iowa and New Hampshire.
We've got a minute left, and this is probably a 10-minute answer required, but just very quickly, as you look at the kinds of statements that have been made about the Islamic State, do you have the concern that I do, that we're focusing too narrowly on that, bad as it is, as kind of an exemplar of a larger problem, but missing the larger problem, Denny Pletka?
Absolutely. No, I think that's a really an acute statement, because we have been talking about ISIS and we have been ignoring the fact that Al-Qaeda is on the march, that they have spread and grown and strengthened and have territory really in more countries than they even did certainly in 2001 before the 9/11 attacks. We're not paying attention to the Chinese in the way that we can, because we don't have the reach or the lift. Incredibly, the United States of America can't do that. And worse yet, we're not paying attention to what the Russians are up to. We're giving them a free pass on Ukraine. So around the world, there are these terrible hotspots. And ISIS is not a distraction. It is a concern, but it's not our only concern.
It is a symptom of that larger problem. Denny Pletka, I know you are keeping your eye on all of these balls. Thank you for doing so and for your commentaries wherever they appear. We're always grateful to you for joining us to provide them here. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. In the meantime, Happy New Year to you. Thank you, Jim. James O'Keefe joins us next. We'll talk about Common Core. It turns out it's not about the kids. It's about the money. Straight ahead. Thank you.
go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.